Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I would like to inform all participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. Today's call is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Leslie Gordon. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Amanda, and welcome everybody for another morning or daily AM briefing. We've been calling these daily briefings, and that's mostly true. I do want to alert people that starting next Sunday on June 10th, we're going to drop to 6 days a week. So we will not have a briefing on Sunday, June 10th. Otherwise, we'll have one every day, and we'll probably skip Sundays. And I'll remind you as the week goes on. My name is Leslie Gordon with the U.S. Geological Survey. I have four speakers on the line today. Janet Babb is a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. Kyle Anderson is a geophysicist with the USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. Jessica Farrakane is a public information officer at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. And Lee Eaton is with the National Weather Service. So the first speaker, in fact, HVO for the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, we only have one speaker, Janet, and Kyle will be available afterward to answer questions. So our first speaker is Janet Babb, BEAT as in boy, A-B-B. She is a geologist at the USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory.
Good morning, all. So the story continues to be the Fissure 8 eruption. It continues to produce fountains up to around 220 feet high, and there's a vigorous channelized flow that's sending lava to the northeast along Highway 132 to the Kapoho area. And as of 10:30 last night, lava was reported entering the ocean. And as of 6:30 this morning, that ocean entry had created a delta that extended a few hundred yards into the bay. Other fissures are inactive except for a sluggish flow in the vicinity of Fissure 18. There are some gas emissions from Fissures 9 and 10, some incandescence of from Fissure 16. There's also a lava breakout that's occurring upslope of the Kapoho Cone cinder pit. There are active flows that are about 330 yards southeast of the intersection of Railroad Avenue and Cinder Road. So this activity on the lower east drift zone, the hazards that are in place, in addition to the normal lava flow hazards, are Pele's Hair from the high fountains. These are thin strands of volcanic glass that can be blown downwind. And then also with the new ocean entry lays or lava haze, which is a plume of seawater steam, hydrochloric acid, gas, and tiny particles of volcanic glass creates a hazard. And that hazard in the immediate area of the ocean entry is certainly serious. It dissipates rather quickly as the lays is blown away from the ocean entry. At the summit, yesterday the earthquake activity was quite high. It kind of culminated with a magnitude 5.5 earthquake at 3:50 p.m. That earthquake resulted from a volcanic explosion and the continued collapse around Halemaumau. The earthquake activity then slowed, but then seems to be picking back up, and we can expect additional earthquakes. That explosion yesterday, radar observations confirmed an ash column that reached a height of 8,000 feet above sea level. And the gas emissions at the summit also remain high. One stat for you, the total, I'm jumping back to the lower east drift zone. The total area covered by lava is now probably right around 20 square kilometers. As of 6 p.m. yesterday, it was 19.9 square kilometers, and so there's been additional lava erupted. So it's on the order of, if we round the numbers, on the order of 5,000 acres. That's all I have.
Thank you, Janet. Our next speaker will be Jessica Farrakhan. That's F as in Frank, E-R-R-A-C-A-N-E. Jessica Farrakhan is the Public Affairs Officer at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park.
Good morning. Couple updates to share on behalf of Hawaii Volcanoes. Yesterday's 5.5 magnitude earthquake really added to the ongoing earthquake damage in the park. Most notably, the overlook deck at Jagger Museum has significant cracks. There's lots of ash, and of course, the continuing earthquakes are the big hazard right now. There will be a news release going out today regarding the closure, the continued closure of the park and the reasons behind it, along with video and photography. If you're not on the park's news release list, please let me know via email or when you ask the question, and I'll ensure you are included in today's news release. On the brighter side, park rangers will start at Volcano Art Center's Niaulani campus in Volcano Village today, and we'll have staff there from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to continue to serve visitors and work with the community. That's all I have.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Lee Eaton. Lee is spelled L-E-I-G-H, Eaton, E-A-T-O-N. She is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service.
Hi, thank you, Leslie. So just continuing off of yesterday's weather, we've got a pretty breezy trade wind pattern, which means those winds are coming from the east-northeast. With a depth about 14 to 15,000 feet. We do have a pretty strong inversion around 9,000 feet. So any of those smaller ash plumes, if any, are going to occur today, or any of the gases that are being emitted usually will be capped around that 9,000 foot level and then continue to go downstream or towards the southwest direction. It looks like the same thing is going to be occurring tomorrow also. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Lee. So it's time to move into questions. I ask that reporters keep it to one question at a time so we make sure to get everybody on the call before our 30 minutes is up. In addition to our three speakers, Janet Babb, Jessica Farrakhan, and Lee Eaton, we also have Kyle Anderson on the line, of geophysicist with the USGS, who can answer questions as well. So Amanda, would you please open it up for our first question?
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name slowly and clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. Again, that is star 1. One moment for our first question, please. Our first question comes from Steve Gorman. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
Hi, this is Steve Gorman from Reuters. I was wondering, given what's going on, we have like this sort of one really active fissure and the number of explosive eruptions from the summit seems to be dwindling, you know, still. It's like I think maybe about one a day or one every other day. And I wonder whether there's, from that or other signs that you've, geologists have been collecting, does it appear that maybe this eruptive cycle is starting to maybe wind down or have run its course, or do we have any clues? Thanks.
No, this is Janet Babb at the USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. No, I don't think any of us are thinking that this is winding down. There's still vigorous lava emissions from fissure 8, and the flows are still moving down slope. Kyle Anderson may say something about the summit.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the summit activity is necessarily winding down. These events have occurred over the last few on the order of a day or a little bit longer. That period is a little bit longer than earlier in the month, but it's still fairly frequent. Geodetically and seismically, these are larger than the earlier events. That is, the amount of felt motion at the summit is a bit higher, and the deformation is a bit larger. From what we can tell, the material that's being put into the air is perhaps a little bit smaller. Again, visibility was fairly poor during yesterday's event. There was ash or plume at least to 8,000 feet, so stuff is still getting out of the system. But I would definitely not say that at this point that it's winding down.
Does that complete your question?
I'm sorry. One of my speakers has got is unmuted and typing a lot. Can you mute your phone, please? Go ahead.
Steve, does that complete your question?
Yes, thank you very much. I didn't know if you could still hear me. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking the question.
You're welcome. One moment. Our next question comes from Brenton Oa. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
KITV, Island News. Question for Janet Babb. Janet, asked you this before, and I don't know if the days gone by has changed anything, but I believe Fisher 8 has been active for the seventh consecutive day. Correct me if I'm wrong, Pu'u'o has collapsed. This is still the same lava coming from that, just a different point in the East Rift Zone, as Jim Kawahiakawa was saying. At what point do you folks, if any, call this the new eruption site?
Hi, Brenton. This is Janet Babb at HVO. Yes, that seems to be the burning question in a lot of minds, and it's causing a lot of discussion among the USGS scientists here. So to declare an eruption, you know, a new and individual and separate eruption, it's kind of a matter of time, because right now we're, it is true that during this ongoing East Rift Zone eruption that started in 1983, there have been times when new vents opened up rift or down rift of Pu'u'o, which was the main vent area. But the previous excursions, they didn't last long, and then they moved back to Pu'u'o, and certainly not more than a month. And so here we are in this eruption on the lower East Rift Zone that's now been, we're at a month and going over a month now since anything's been going on at Pu'u'o. So while some people would want to say that this is, quote-unquote, a new eruption, we really aren't going to tell definitively until this is over and we see if lava returns to Pu'u'o. And it's interesting among scientists, when you get a group of scientists in a room to talk about issues like this, there's not hardly ever complete consensus among the group. So I don't have a really pat answer for you, but clearly it's in a different location, and time will tell if anything does return to Pu'u'o, or if the collapse was the end of that eruption.
Following up, can I follow up with the questioner?
Quickly.
Can you explain Pu'u'o, how long that eruption from that cone happened until it was named as such?
Britton, I don't recall how long it was before it was named. There are a couple of versions of stories how it was named. Also, I want to make the point that USGS does not name features. A lot of the names that we use, for instance, during the Pahoa lava flow, the lava flow that was approaching Pahoa, you know, it was referred to as the June 27th flow. That was not a formal name. That was an informal name that we used internally to help us, because there have been so many different episodes of this ongoing East Rift Zone eruption that, you know, we've used various names, sometimes after the Ahupua'a or after holidays. You know, there was the Martin Luther King flow, there was the Mother's Day flow. We used that internally to help us keep track of one flow from another. But they were not formal names. USGS does not create formal names. Now, Pu'u'o has been formally named, but that was more than USGS. We didn't do that. That was a bigger decision beyond us. And so I don't remember when in the sequence that the name was applied. There are lots of anecdotal stories about how it came to be, but that's for another day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrew Gomes. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
Yes, I'm with the Star Advertiser. Thank you. Regarding Lays, Janet, you said it dissipates rather or fairly quickly. Can you give more detail, like how far it can travel? And I don't know if this depends on the wind speed And is it different for the glass and the hydrogen sulfide in terms of the distance? And then, you know, related to that, is there concern that if people are, you know, somewhere to the southwest that they, you know, that haven't evacuated, that this is a concern for them, or are they far enough away that it's not a concern?
Okay, this is Janet Babb, USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. So the LAYS is an issue certainly in the immediate area of the ocean entry. And I think even, you know, when you see the big white plume coming up there, that plume looks rather innocuous. But it's actually, you know, this steam of seawater steam. It's laced with not, I forget what you said, but it's hydrochloric acid. That's from a chemical interaction with of the hot lava in the seawater. It's hydrochloric acid. And then the lava that's going in the ocean, it chills and it breaks up, and as a result there are these tiny particles of volcanic glass in that plume. So it looks rather innocuous. It's this billowing white plume, but it's pretty corrosive. In fact, the corrosivity is about out of a dilute, when you're in the immediate area of the ocean entry, it's about as corrosive as dilute battery acid. And so as the wind blows it, of course, as it dissipates, and you can just, I mean, you can visually, you can see this as that plume is blown away. It gets thinner and thinner, and then you just see, you know, it gets down to a wisp. But even the wispy edges of the plume, you know, you can feel the effects of the LAYS. You know, it can sting your eyes, your nose. You know, you can sometimes, you can see little sparkles on your skin. That's the glass falling out on your skin. And so if that's happening, you're too close and should not be in that area. As far as I don't know exactly where people are living and how close they are. Again, it depends on the wind direction and their relative distance from that. But certainly in the immediate area of the ocean entry, the LAYS is not a good thing to be in. And even the wispy edges you should try to avoid.
Thank you. Is there a safe distance, radius or something?
No, we really can't say that. It depends largely on the wind. There's no set number that we can say on that. But I can say, generally speaking, for ocean entries, there are many hazards associated with ocean entries. And we generally say that you should keep a 300-meter radius from an ocean entry, both inland and seaward, because of these various hazards.
Thank you.
Does that conclude your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Daryl Huff. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
Hi, from Hawaii News Now. You know, it might just be psychological or hysterical, but a couple of people have asked me if there's any chance that through some high-level winds or upper-level action in the atmosphere that there is some material making its way up as far as Oahu. I had one person say, oh, they think that there's dust showing up that they haven't seen before that they think is ash. Another person says that they feel like their lungs are more irritated than usual. I recognize this is a trade wind pattern, and I don't think this is possible, but for their sake, I'd like to ask if that's at all possible that it's happening.
This is Janet Babb. I think the National Weather Service might chime in here on this better than us. I mean, I would think VOG can make its way to Oahu, but I don't know about the particulates. National Weather Service?
Yeah, hi. So especially in our breezier conditions that we're having right now, most of that VOG is going to stay to the south of us, right? It's going to push off of the Big Island and continue off to the south. And you can see it through the satellite where the stream is going. And since we've had a pretty consistent trade wind pattern, I wouldn't say Oahu's actually seeing too much effect of any of this. In cases where the winds would turn out of the south at the southeast, then sure, it would be coming up. And then after about the 14,000, 15,000 foot level, our winds are from the west. So and anything that's making it higher than that level is definitely not making it to Oahu.
Okay, so that's a no then, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Caleb Jones. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
There's the Associated Press. Janet, this is for you, and apologies if you've answered this question before. I haven't been on in the past few days, but are we still seeing lava from Pu'u'o'o and from the summit lava lake appearing in the eruptions down the East Rift Zone, or is there a possibility that there's new magma coming up from the core of the Earth? Is that a possibility, or is this all still lava flowing down?
Okay, this is Janet Babb. The petrology, or the analyses that we're doing of the lava that's being erupted in the Lower East Rift Zone has been fairly consistent since around May 20th. And the composition is not identical to what was being erupted at Pu'u'o'o, but it's similar, and it's been steady since, like I said, May 20th. And so right now we're still doing further analyses that would shed light on if some of this might be coming from farther up the East Rift Zone and towards the summit. But those analyses are not available yet. But the material is certainly material that's coming through the East Rift Zone and not some other source.
Okay, good. If I could just follow up really quick, I think I heard somewhere over the weekend that there was an estimate of about 2% of the lava that's in the system from Pu'u'o'o having come out so far. Is that accurate? And if so, is there an updated percentage on how much lava there may be behind this eruption?
No. So sorry, this is Kyle Anderson, USGS. There's been a lot of confusion about that 2% number. The point we were trying to get across is that the amount of material, the amount of magma which has departed the summit storage system is very small relative to the amount of magma that remains. It is probably on the order of a few percent. I don't want to give a specific number for that. So, again, the material that has left the summit is small compared to the material that is left behind. We wanted to make that point because there was a conception that the summit storage system was close to being fully evacuated or a large fraction had left, and that is not the case. So this does not relate to Pu'u'o specifically. This is to do with the summit.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I add something to the answer to that question? This is Leslie Gordon again. The part of the question is you asked about, it was kind of your voice trailed off at the end of your question about whether there was new material coming from the core of the Earth. I'm not sure I heard that correctly, but I wanted to clarify that magma does not come from that deep. It comes from the very top of the mantle or the bottom of the lithosphere and does not come from the core of the Earth. And then, as Kyle alluded to, is even when the magma comes up from the bottom of the lithosphere, it gets stored in an area in a magma chamber inside of Kilauea before it goes elsewhere. So
I'm sorry, I used core. That was the wrong term. I actually meant more as if there would be another mantle break or another reservoir of lava underneath the East Rift Zone as opposed to the lava chamber above in Kilauea.
Okay, I'm sorry for butting in. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alyssa Estrada. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
Hi, I'm with CBS News. I just had a question regarding the rescues recently of the three people. I heard that USGS may have had a role in these rescues, so I wanted to see what that role was and if you all worked in conjunction with emergency first responders in getting those people out of the evacuation zone.
Hi, this is Janet Babb with the U.S. Geological Survey. So, yes, there are USGS did play a part. We're not a search and rescue operation, but we do fly frequently over flights of the lava flow to as part of our monitoring effort and tracking the flow. And so we did have a field crew in the air when they noted some people seeming to need attention. They checked with the people, landed, checked with the people, yes, people had no cell coverage, and so the helicopter flew the USGS crew out of that area to a safe spot. They got off the helicopter. The helicopter went and got the three people and took them back to the safe spot where the U.S. geoscientists were, and the U.S. geoscientists got back on the helicopter and resumed their monitoring activities.
Okay, thank you, Janet.
And further, you know, further information about that should be addressed to Hawaii County Civil Defense, their emergency operations.
Copy that.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Justin Duty. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
I'm with the Wave at 92 FM on the Big Island of Hawaii. So NASA has flown a 3G plane over the area. There has been subsonic recording devices put into place. There have been laser mapping of the Halemaumau caldera. Just wondering about what types of technologies have recently been implemented and which ones are on the horizon that that you're interested in seeing some data from.
This is Kyle Anderson, USGS. Yeah, there are a tremendous number of new techniques we're applying to this eruption. One that I am in particular I'm excited about is the use of UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. Many of you probably saw imagery of the summit from June 1st. Those were flown with permission of the Park Service with a UAV. And that allowed us for the first time to really get an idea of the morphological changes that have occurred and to see that the vent was blocked with rubble at that time. That was something that would not have been possible on foot due to the hazard. So the visual observations coming out of the UAVs were really fantastic. We use those to build maps. We also have attached gas monitoring equipment to those, so we're able to get constraints on the amount of gas coming out of the summit and the East Rift Zone. UAVs have been used for mapping the flow fronts, estimating lava effusion volumes also down in the East Rift Zone. So just a tremendous range of opportunities, I think, for that particular technology. And there are many others as well.
Do you want to share a couple of the other ones? This is very interesting.
I guess one that's actually been used for a long time that has been particularly useful at this eruption is mapping deformation of the ground surface from space. This is INSAR, Interferometric Synthetic Aperture Radar. It's a technique that's been around for a long time. But it allows us to record and ultimately model deformation over broad swaths of the Earth's surface from space. That's independent of weather, which is really nice. So that's allowed us to constrain, for example, the movement of material from the Middle East Rift down to the Lower East Rift, the emplacement of that magma intrusion, to track the evacuation of magma from the summit, all independently of our instruments on the ground. We do, of course, have an extensive ground-based network, but those are point measurements, and some of those instruments have been destroyed in the eruption. So INSAR lets us map deformation over really the broad swath of the volcano from space. And again, that's a technique that's been around for a long time, but is really proving its usefulness again here at Kilauea during this eruption.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Daryl Huff. Your line is open. Please state your affiliation.
Hi, Hawaii News Now. Could you describe a little bit more the damage to the facility at Volcano House? I think I understand that that's where it was, where the observation deck is up there on the slope. Do you have quite a bit of damage, and could you describe that a little bit more? And do you think that's going to affect the ability to open up?
Say again, sorry, I kind of trampled on the end of your sentence there, sorry.
I'm just wondering what the prognosis is for, you know, the long-term damage and whether it's going to affect your ability to reopen.
Yes, thanks. This is Jessica Farrakhan with Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and it wasn't the Volcano House, it was the Jagger Museum outdoor overlook, and this is where, you know, 99% of our visitors would normally go to watch the happenings from Halemaumau Crater. So after yesterday, there's been a notable cracking along that overlook deck, the outdoor deck. And as mentioned, I'll include some photos of that when I send out the news release shortly after this call. There was damage to that, though, starting from May 4th. So when May 4th, I believe we had that, it was a 6.9, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of the numbers are blurring. But we had significant damage to Jagger Museum, to USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory building, and to the park's Visitor Emergency Operations Center. So at least three buildings have sustained earthquake damage starting from May 4th
and continuing through now. As far as being able to safely assess them, that's the challenge right now because we have limited staffing up there due to the increased hazards because of the ongoing earthquakes. So, you know, it remains to be seen how long it will take for us to be able to safely assess the damage and to be able to plan reopening once the activity ceases. We're not going to be opening any time before the current activity diminishes.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, there are no further questions. As a reminder, please press star 1.
Actually, Amanda, this is a perfect opportunity to call a close to our briefing since there are no more questions in the queue. It's been 30 minutes, so I'd like to thank all of our speakers today, Janet Babb, Kyle Anderson, Jessica Farrakhan, and Lee Eaton. Thank you, reporters, for joining in. Please do join us again tomorrow at the same time, same phone and same code number, and we'll have another briefing tomorrow. Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.